Hello and welcome. My name is Steve Green. I am an assistant professor and heart failure cardiologist at Duke in the Duke Clinical Research Institute. I am thrilled to be joined today by my good friend and colleague, Dr. Muthu Vadugunathan from the Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. We are excited. It's 2022, and we're here to launch our new podcast called Don't Miss a Beat. Right, Muthu?
Thanks, Steve. I'm really excited to do this with you. Don't Miss a Beat is intended to be a monthly podcast. It's hosted by Inside Cardiology. And we hope that through this forum, we can make trials in cardiorenal metabolism more accessible to a broader group of people. And I couldn't be more excited to do this with such a good friend. So excited to kick things off, Steve.
Oh, absolutely. Looking forward as we've been talking about this for a while now. So what is Don't Miss a Beat? Well, you know, Don't Miss a Beat, as Muthu alluded to, is going to be a regular news roundup of the latest evidence, clinical trial insights across the spectrum of cardiovascular, renal, and metabolic diseases. And just a bit of background about this podcast is that Don't Miss a Beat is presented, as Muthu mentioned, by Inside Cardiology, which is a multimedia program hosted by practicalcardiology.com. It's a publication part of the MGH Life Science family. And practicalcardiology.com is a comprehensive clinical news and information platform aimed at providing cardiologists and other clinicians with up-to-date specialty and disease-specific resources designed to help them better provide care to patients. And importantly, all episodes of Don't Miss a Beat can be found on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and practicalcardiology.com. So Muthu, you know, a lot of folks are going to be wondering, well, why are we doing this? Why are we launching a podcast? And, you know, what kind of spurred this idea? And, you know, we've noted, you know, collectively, there's been a major shift in how both of us and how many others really consume medical literature, you know, internalized data. And it seems that podcasts have really risen in popularity, not only for general news, but again, as a scientific resource. And I know that you and I are both talking about trying to extend, you know, what we see in the clinical trial and research literature to make it more accessible, but also importantly, digestible for a broad audience.
I couldn't agree with you more, Steve. You know, trials really sit at the top of the pyramid of scientific evidence. And in many ways, trials have their own language, their own rule book, and even their own cast of characters, their own trial experts and leaders. And we hope to bring this all together, bring this to life, bring in special guests to unpack top line findings, really revisit upcoming and recent conferences, as well as dive deep into the intricacies of trials to help with the interpretation.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, you know, also doing that, but also tying it, a lot of the episodes are going to focus on specific facets of trial architecture. You know, we've heard these phrases, you know, run-in period, win ratio, adaptive trials, you know, these buzzwords and thoughts get thrown around a lot, but we're hoping to, throughout the course of the year and going forward, to really tackle these piece by piece. And again, how they link with a ongoing or recently completed clinical trial.
And we really hope to touch on these merging disciplines of cardiorenal metabolism, or CRM. You know, these conditions are not only highly prevalent and increasingly intersecting, but often are studied in similarly designed studies and trials, and even with the same interventions. I've always found it kind of striking that three of the disease-modifying therapies, for instance, that we see in heart failure care are actually common to chronic kidney disease management now. And, you know, these two entities have really traditionally been thought to be separate and distinct with unique pathological drivers, but maybe that's not true. Maybe they're actually more common than we think. So we'll especially focus on some of these elements that stand at the intersection between these conditions in Don't Miss a Beat. And so I think that we'll have a lot to talk about in the upcoming year.
No, absolutely agree. And I think you very well said that, yeah, it's becoming more and more amazing to me that the overlapping therapies, the treatment effects, the patient populations, of all three of these, you know, what traditionally have been thought of maybe as distinct entities, but now certainly blurring of the lines. So with that background, we're certainly very excited to be launching this podcast. And again, really thrilled to be here for the first episode here today. But, you know, as, you know, the first episode, Mutu and I were trying to think about, well, how can we really, you know, give background on where Mutu and I have come from in our own journey to try to become early career investigators and cardiologists. And I think both of us really quickly came to the same answer of how things really got started. And that was our mentor, Dr. Mihai Georgiadi at Northwestern. So I'll let Mutu start off, and we definitely want to give tribute to Mihai during this first podcast episode.
Exactly. I don't think many of our listeners may know that we've really shared foundational roots in clinical medicine and research, and even started out our journey together at Northwestern. And in fact, probably our core interests and our attraction towards trials and heart failure specifically were seeded by our common mentor, Dr. Georgiadi. So Mihai was really this kind of larger than life persona, if many of you knew him. He had his quirks, he added flair wherever he went. I'm sure over the years, he probably rubbed a few people the wrong way, but I think most really held him very close as a friend, colleague, and really visionary.
I completely agree. I think anyone who knew him, you immediately noticed his passion for heart failure and his dedication. And I think, you know, he was very well known as a, you know, big name clinical trialist. You know, his resume would speak for itself with the long list of publications, the clinical trial executive committees that he led, and really practice changing research in heart failure and particularly hospitalized heart failure patients. But I think, you know, as legendary for a lot of us as his, you know, CV and his scientific accomplishments was his passion for mentorship, really for advocating and really sponsoring young people. And I think, you know, that's where you and I, Mutu, were so fortunate just to really, you know, stumble across getting to know Mihai, and, you know, really was a true, you know, inflection point for me. You know, I first started meeting him, met him as a third year medical student when I sent him an email, you know, asking to get involved in cardiovascular research and if he had any use for me, essentially. I had very little understanding of cardiology at the time, but I thought maybe it might be something I wanted to do. But really hadn't thought about heart failure that much, to be quite frank, at that time. But, you know, I really do think about serendipity. You know, if I hadn't sent that email, maybe I wouldn't have the passion or the interest in heart failure that I have today, because I was so real you know, early in my career at that time. And I think he did that for so many other folks as well. And I think his legacy, you know, after he has passed away, is really going to be carried forward by the long list of mentees that he made such a life-changing impact for.
Yeah, looking around, Steve, you know, Mihai has really touched the careers of so many early career, now mid-career trialists in the field today. And he really embodied mentorship in the truest form, and really supported this almost apprenticeship model of how to teach. You sat with him for an afternoon, you took calls with him, you answered emails with him, you really learned the nuts and bolts of what it meant to be a trialist. You know, we certainly will miss Mihai dearly and want to pay tribute to him as a part of this podcast. And we're glad that in some ways, we'll be able to carry forward his vision as a part of this podcast, and certainly his teachings with respect to clinical trials.
No, I absolutely agree. And as you were mentioning that, you know, sitting down with him in that apprenticeship model that you spoke to, so true. You know, you get these, you know, calls at sometimes off hours, or you sit in his office for a long period of time and get asked essentially all these questions that a lot of them were guess what I'm thinking, that I don't think anyone besides him would know the answer to. But again, the FaceTime essentially that he gave to such, you know, young, you know, medical students and residents such as, you know, you and me at the time, the amount of FaceTime that he gave and dedication that he gave, you know, as a, you know, quote unquote big name trialist at the time, is really amazing. And I think, again, I think also viewing this podcast as another way of trying to, you know, carry forward his legacy on heart failure education, but also the cardiorenal metabolic space.
Perfect. You know, I think to kind of kick things off as a part of this podcast, it would be really nice to look back at this last year and perhaps kind of maybe you and I can share our top picks for our favorite trials. Despite everything that has happened in the world with COVID-19, I think trial science in cardiorenal metabolism has really moved forward at such a rapid speed over the last few years. So it's going to be hard to pick, but I'm curious to hear what you think, Steve. What's your top fit pick for us cardiorenal metabolic trial in 2021?
It's great. It's a very challenging question because, like you said, there was a huge amount of progress made in 2021 for the cardiorenal metabolic space. But, you know, I will have to, people who know me best will probably not be surprised by this, but I am going to choose Emperor Preserved as my top 2021 cardiorenal metabolic trial. And I know, Mutu, you're obviously very familiar with this trial. And I think, you know, at first, at face value, you realize that, yes, it's a clearly positive trial. There was a 21% relative risk reduction for the primary endpoint of cardiovascular mortality or heart failure hospitalization with empagliflozin for patients with HFpEF as compared with placebo. And it met, statistically speaking, in a meaningful way, the secondary endpoints as well. So it hit the primary endpoint and two pre-specified secondary endpoints, all statistically significant and clinically significant. So clearly you have a home run trial right there. But the thing that makes Emperor so really monumental, in my opinion, is that this is the first definitively positive trial we have for patients with HFpEF. We talk about it all the time, with HFpEF being, you know, really now the majority of the patients in the United States with heart failure. Yet prior to this, we really didn't have a definitive, you know, therapy to really that was disease modifying at the time before Emperor Preserved. So, you know, really, just based on where we've been with HFpEF, this clearly positive trial really stands out. What do you think, Mutu?
Yeah, so exciting. I fully agree. I think Emperor Preserved really stands out amongst our prior trials in this space. Important improvements in hospitalization risk, important improvements in health-related quality of life. I think that in itself, for such a high-risk population that faces a high burden of worsening heart failure events and adverse health status, I think is an important advance. It also, in some ways, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts, in some ways simplifies things in that we can finally think of heart failure as a whole. Heart failure has really been riddled by subgroups and subdivisions and variations in nomenclature. And, you know, I wonder if as their therapies that we've kind of identified over the years really become, begin to expand across the ejection fraction spectrum, I wonder if things will simplify over time, such that we start to talk about heart failure as a whole and perhaps focus on more important elements beyond ejection fraction.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a great thought. And I certainly agree. There's been a lot of controversy now after Emperor Preserved came out, and, you know, other clinical trials too, looking at the treatment effect by ejection fraction. There's actually been calls by, you know, some experts in the field that we really need to focus on the ejection fraction classification that has been so ingrained in heart failure care, over the years, and really the way the clinical trials were always designed with eligibility criteria. But, you know, as you see on this slide here, you know, we see that the therapies that were traditionally, you know, reserved for patients with HFrEF less than or equal to 40%, or in some cases 35%, where they showed strong efficacy. And now when you look at the continuous spectrum across ejection fraction, you do see that those therapies do exert, in some cases, some benefit for patients above the 40%. Emperor Preserved being the blockbuster that certainly met that bar. You know, the thing that I'll say, and again, this is very controversial, I don't know if we're going to get to the answer on this podcast, but you know, it seems that, you know, ejection fraction in my mind still matters because, you know, even if you talk that some therapies, you know, exert benefits above 40%, it does seem like there are thresholds for a lot of therapies where the treatment effect does seem to be attenuated. So when you start talking about, you know, making informed decisions on risk benefit ratios, the magnitude of risk to expect in terms of efficacy, also cost effectiveness, value, I do think personally that there's going to be some role for always knowing the ejection fraction for patients, but certainly it's a hot topic right now, and I know you'll agree with definitely being a hot topic.
Yeah, I agree. I was mostly nudging you about simplification. I don't think we're quite there yet, and I don't think we're certainly at a time point in which we can dismiss ejection fraction. It remains the most powerful modifier of treatment effects across therapies that we see. And looking ahead, we have several exciting trials that will provide even more evidence across the ejection fraction spectrum, including DELIVER that will come out, will add evidence for heart failure with an ejection fraction above 40% with dapagliflozin. In addition, Fine Arts, which will in a large cohort of patients, will add evidence regarding the MRAs in ejection fraction above 40%. So more to come and more to shed light on if we truly see this attenuation, which is has really shaped how we think about heart failure and its nomenclature. So, you know, my top pick is a little bit different. I meandered out of the scope of heart failure and into hypertension, which in many ways is probably the largest attributable risk towards global heart failure events. And this was the SAS trial, and this is the salt substitute stroke trial that was presented by Professor Bruce Neal from the George Institute. And I thought this was just a fascinating example of a well-conducted trial in so many ways, and provided really landmark practice-changing results in a pragmatic, relatively pragmatic setting, and tackled an issue of, in some ways, nutrition science that has, to date, has had really smaller studies of lower quality. SAS really took this question of, does salt reduction improve cardiovascular events to scale? And the trial evaluated over 20,000 participants across 600 villages in China and employed a cluster randomized design in which villages as a whole were randomized to a potassium supplemented sodium substitute product versus kind of usual care, which was 100% sodium chloride. And participants would use this for all cooking, all their daily use requirements. And patients were followed over time. These were generally older patients, many of whom had a prior history of stroke or hypertension, and were followed over time for a primary endpoint of stroke and secondary endpoints inclusive of death. And impressively, the trial showed that villages that were randomized to the salt substitute had a reduction, not only stroke, but also major adverse cardiovascular events and all-cause mortality. And so I think it was a really powerful example of how we can move the field forward with large trials that can be conducted even at a population level that provide generalizable answers to common questions that come up in clinical practice. What do you think, Steve?
Oh, absolutely agree. This was a headliner. The results were so impressive. And again, for a pragmatic trial, you know, oftentimes we worry about, you know, non-adherence or crossover and, you know, things of that nature. But you know, to me, aside from just the endpoint results, was just looking at the adherence data that they had and how the therapy, and again, a very pragmatic, like low touch way, were able to maintain reasonable adherence to both sides of the intervention. And then also they check that by, you know, checking people's blood pressures, you know, to confirm to have a mechanism at play for how these, you know, endpoint results were seen. And it did lower blood pressure. The urine sodium that was excreted also was different between the treatment arms. So again, it wasn't, you know, some people will say, well, if you just have endpoints without the mechanism, maybe it's not as believable. But here you clearly have strong endpoint results, including all-cause death, and you have really good mechanistic plausibility. You know, in a pragmatic trial, man, this really hit all areas here.
Yeah, and really kind of begins to lend answers to mechanisms as well, as you said. You know, was it the lower sodium or was it the higher potassium that actually helped? And perhaps the trial itself won't give us fully those answers, but does make us wonder. But I think that, you know, we will be shedding light on implementation focused trials in later episodes. I think this was a shining example in 2021 of a well-conducted trial in the implementation science space. So, you know, I think that about wraps it up for this initial podcast. You know, we hope that over the next year, we can provide some insights about the latest in trial science and cardiorenal metabolism. And just remember, you can find us at Don't Miss a Beat on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and practicalcardiology.com. Your home for clinically relevant news and information impacting cardiology. Thank you so much for listening. And Steve, excited to do this with you.
Absolutely. Take care, everyone.